Stanley House for Louis Dudek. On her way to Gaspé, not long after E.J. Pratt died. Narowski driving the car. Dudek with Bray, Moth organ, and giant horn-rim glasses. Oh, Christ, I screwed that up completely. Transpose words. On her way to Gaspé, not long after E.J. Pratt died. Narowski driving the car. Dudek with Bray, Moth organ, and horn-rim glasses. Like a giant mosquito in the front seat. Composing a dirge for Pratt. When we stopped at service stations, attendants looked at me peculiarly. Dudek had told him I was the idiot son of a millionaire. It paid him to be my nursemaid. I kept looking for female kidnappers. At the house in Bay Chaleur, poets gathered together while the wood fire burned. And something about these middle-aged men who bossed no construction projects nor captained any industry, did none of the world's hard work, merely sang middle-aged songs. A carelessness to the meeting that gave it a kind of grace, like seeing a butterfly with suspenders. What happened? Some things you notice, like knotted string. But what happened in between what happened, I didn't notice. What happened after is beyond noticing at all. Like seeing in the middle of lovemaking, the mended spot in the sheet looks like a white carnation. The woman and the flower bloom alone now. Going was just as casual, goodbye and one for the road. Next day, when dawn looked in the windows, no one there, or hardly anyone. In Bay Chaleur at ebb tide, herons staked out across the shallows in their motionless fishing ritual. But no one looking at them either. The middle-aged butterfly is gone. I think I read that before. I didn't read this one. Under the banyan tree. Leaving the TV set to mutter in the office, opening the cooler door. A brown deer hung beside red beef quarters. Something wrong, a feeling of shock. Brown is a life color in this dead place. And red with white fat is butcher's meat. You'd be surprised to find among trees. Of course the hunters left it here, tired from the drive south, and went to bed. Later on they'll come back with saws and knives, cut the thing into small parcels, 2 or 3 pounds each, and wrap it. Give some to their friends. With fans humming above, I stood thinking of deadness and lifeness, trying to make it mean what it meant. The sudden pricklings in hands and feet, like a man deaf from birth, hearing a foreign language. A blind man with symbols under his eyelids. The television voice become Samson's death scream under the long drum roll of falling columns. Thought was the voice of God. In any case, I lacked the sense that allows some people to know what they don't comprehend, and love by conviction love is necessary, or hate justifiably and enjoy guilt. But I was disturbed by something. Call it whatever you like. I'm not really sure it exists. It's a cold place to decide. Lament for the Dorsets. Eskimos extinct in the 14th century A.D. Animal bones and some mossy tent rings. Scrapers and spearheads. Carved ivory swans. All that remains of the Dorset giants who drove the Vikings back to their longships. Talks to spirits of earth and water. A picture of terrifying old men. So large they broke the backs of bears. So small they lurk behind bone rafters in the brains of modern hunters, among good thoughts and warm things, and come out at night to spit on the stars. The big men with clever fingers who had no dogs and hauled their sleds over the frozen northern oceans, awkward giants, killers of seal. They couldn't compete with little men who came from the west with dogs. Or else in a warm climatic cycle the seals went back to cold waters, and the puzzled Dorsets scratched their heads with hairy thumbs around 1350 A.D. Couldn't figure it out, went around saying to each other plaintively, "What's wrong? What happened? Where are the seals gone?" And died. 20th century people, apartment dwellers, executives of neon death, War makers with things that explode. They have never imagined us in their future. How could we imagine them in the past? As remote or nearly as the trilobites in swamps when coal became, or the last great reptile hissed at a mammal the size of a mouse that squeaked and fled. Did they ever realize at all what was happening to them? Some old hunter with one lame leg, a bear had chewed, sitting in a caribou skin tent. The last Dorset. Let's say his name was Cudluck, carving 2-inch ivory swans for a dead granddaughter, taking them out of his mind, the places in his mind where pictures are. He selects a sharp stone tool to gouge a parallel pattern of lines in both sides of the swan, holding it with his left hand, bearing down, and transmitting his body's weight from brain to arm and right hand. And one of his thoughts turns to ivory. The carving is laid aside in beginning darkness, at the end of hunger. After a while, wind blows down the tent, and snow begins to cover him. After 600 years, the ivory thought is still warm. Dream of Havana, 1964. Talking to red Chinese sailors with a Cuban interpreter at a bar in a dark nightclub. It's so hot, the air is thick. You have to go sideways first to get where you're going. Outside on the waterfront, anti-aircraft guns point to the sky. Searchlights swing like jumpy nerves, awaiting an invasion. An American warship cruises beyond the 12-mile limit, an international ghost, waiting for buttons to be pushed in the Sierra Maestras. Tanks rumble over mountain roads among the coconut palms. Here in Havana, Castro finds another friend's apartment, settles down for the night, while his potential assassin dials information. What world is this I've come to? I don't believe it, not for a moment. Think of something else. Retreat to a woman's breasts, childhood, broken toys, and a lost dog. Trouble enough. Mothers calling children home for bedtime, while the red Chinese sailors mumble in my ear. I drink white rum to the sound of trombones. Further deponent saith not. I am trapped in an old house full of paintbrushes and hammers, saws and spirit levels and things, which I'm supposed to use for some constructive purpose. But I take a drink of rye instead and test the canned fruit for fermentation in the cellar, whose rafters I am supposed to jack up with a house jack. And indeed do jack up with a house jack. God goes swooping through the timbers and shakes hands with all the doorknobs, mistaking them for businessmen. And U.S. Steel closes at 1984, but I prefer Seagram's 83, which stays open all the time. And there are 16 King James Bibles and 12 hymn books in that cellar, without a word of a lie. And moved by some tender religious impulse, I sing, throw out the lifeline to the dead who once lived in this 100-year-old house, and we're all music lovers. And someone knocks at the door. I figure it must be a bill collector. I figure there must be a town out there for there to be bill collectors. In any event, he's unwelcome. In any case, I have the Seagrams, and saws, and hammers, and paintbrushes, and climb the walls to the attic, and sing from the roof at God, having belched loudly to secure his attention, saying, show me the way to go home. But he ignores the melodious sounds. And nails get bent, and glass painted, and dead feelings hurt, and it's a long time till death, a long way from birth, in this house I once lived in, where I sit writing and drinking rye. And the ghosts of all the Purdy's who ever live make hissing sounds out loud and cuss me good. But it's no use. I absolutely refuse to contribute to foreign missionaries. I got the Seagrams. It seems like I've never been anywhere else but here. So I hammer a nail vindictively. It bends. I clean a window energetically. It breaks. And I cut my finger on the damn glass. Anyway, I got the Seagram's. No, by God, I haven't. Someone drank it, the bastard. The fridge motor buzzes and drones. Silence grimaces to itself. The walls creak and mutter like imbeciles. And there is someone at the door. There is someone at the door who wishes to deliver my death certificate and a pleasing floral tribute for shut-ins. Also my marriage certificate and birth ditto. Title deed in fee simple for one used lawnmower. Absolution for your sins absolutely. Bring out your dead and come yourself. I am not at home. I am not at home. Interruption. When the new house was built, callers came. Black squirrels on the roof every morning, between sleep and wakefulness, and a voice saying, "Hello, dead man." Chipmunks look in the windows, and you look out, but neither moves for their lifetime and half yours. Orioles, robins, and red-winged blackbirds are crayons that color the air. Something sad and old cries down in the swamp. Moonlight in the living room. A row of mice, single file, root marching across the flat silver plain, till they touch one of my thoughts and jump back frightened, but I don't wake up. Pike in the lake pass and repass the windows with clouds in their mouth. For 20 minutes every night, the sun slaps a red paintbrush over dinner dishes and leftovers, but we keep washing it off. Birds can't take a shortcut home. They have to fly around the new house. And cedars grow pale green candles to light their way through the dark. Already the house is old. A drowned chipmunk in the rain barrel this morning. Dead robins in the roof overhang. And the mice are terrified. We have set traps. Must always remember to avoid them ourselves. Shopping at Loblaws. Nearly trapped her at the turnstile for the fur jacket she wore, reaching out one hand for the chrome cage held quarry amounting to 100 pounds or so, hesitated, then followed her down the aisle with a wire baby buggy among the bananas and citrus fruits, her little behind waggling both syllables in unison, unseizable past the eggs and cheese. Guaranteed fresh and edible, thinking of her trapped in that turnstile, her anger resurrecting undead meat, electrocuting popcorn. That would be some sort of beginning, which is always chaos, known survivors say. The Campbell's soup distracts me, and 7 pounds of Pacific salmon flip their lids and gravitate ceilingwards. Also, canned corned beef attached locketwise under a matron's brisket flops like Lazarus. Makes like a quadruped galloping shoplifter down aisles of cornflakes and cereal seed germinating from memory inside wax paper. Chaos again, I guess, is beginning, even for middle-aged window shoppers, though ending in definite order, with everything wrapped and packaged and instinct roped tight and the subconscious caged taut in white bone turnstile. But me, Neanderthal, I snarl happily at rival buggy drivers and forget turn signals. Run down an old-age pensioner in drugs and sundries. Pursue the waggling fanny to quality stationery. I quarry 2 shoppers in front, but I cut them off an instant coffee. Oh, the cut-rate jello almost eludes at the cashier, and I reach out one trembling hand, wish to touch both packages. Excuse me, miss, you drop your camisole. Me, Neanderthal, me, itis picupus, emasculus promiscuous. Her eyes look past me at some river bottom, full of unpackaged mollusks and slugs and snails. For someone, the cashier rings up $14.98. For me, she rings up a package of cigarettes. I receive 1 pink stamp. The package buttocks swirl through turnstile, unhindered, and conjure a hot boy. Opt for a Buick. Heads for a duplex, or equivalent. I lope to the tavern, intending to repackage myself, for better or worse, as alcoholic. With flesh-colored label outside, Dow or Red Cap. Well, it might have been Amor, or some rare emotional disorder. Doctors have no cure for anyway. But the fur piece look well worth trapping. These are poems that have already been read, but which have been revised since. Uncle John on Côte de Neige. Join this family group, smiling at the cool photographer. Join but stay outside, tension so strong it corrodes the lens. While the old, effeminate, and very English prof caresses his Greek wife as if the gods of the Greeks were jealous and alive in her body, and as if those lousy old gods outside his skin might cry aloud and decide against miscegenation and the English verb to be, after all. The dull daughter and rascally brother-in-law, complete in equilibrium, as precarious as the one Daedalus invented for his molting son. If one of these should leave the room, he might return with an axe or a flower, or never return at all. None of these dare imagine what that would be like. Nothing happens. Uncle John fills up and in all the crevices of time with talk that recurs and recurs, decants the cream de pont of books and sad words from a prepared reel of authentic quotations, so that reality is only an inflection of an eclectic electronic device known only to humans. Of books and sad words from a prepared reel of authentic quotations, so that reality is only an inflection of an eclectic electronic device known only to humans. Uncle John swings me into the family syllogism, and giddy we ride, merry we ride out of decadence and into the new barbarism. Caught up with Greek wife and doll daughter and rascally brother-in-law, who sells me the Parthenon, the Brooklyn Bridge thrown in a semantic device which I think before Descartes, and therefore I am tangled in plumb lines and aerial lianas, trapped in vortices and whirlpools, tripped up in tiger sentences, drowned in small thoughts of Uncle John, oh Uncle John. The lengthening vowels drawl into a soft, slurred holiness and me liberty. Look it up. The clever tricks of speech receive expected moderate applause. Philosophy of the Renaissance and the menopause, and terror that accustomed things, the mental image we have of life, is after all insufficient. In the midst of patterns, one turns to eccentricity, the cultivation of strange hobbies. In the semi-darkness, his eyes glow. Meantime, the faulty, sponsoring mind of the tightrope walker analyzes his vertigo. Goodbye to Uncle John. Goodbye to Greek wife and doll daughter and rather rascally brother-in-law. Goodbye, 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 goodbye to be, and he is for a long, long time. Yet there he, alive-o, is, back where I, in the photographer's dark room, remember him. Elegy for a Grandfather. This also has been revised 99 times or so. Originally published in 57. Well, he died, I guess. They said he did. His wide whalebone hips will make a prehistoric barrow, a kitchen midden for mice in the northern sod, where relatives bowed their heads in real and pretended sorrow for the dearly beloved gone, thank Christ to God. After a bad century, a tough, big-bellied pharaoh, the deck of cards in his pocket and a Presbyterian grin. Maybe he did die, but the boy didn't understand it. The man knows now in the schoolmarm's tales retold of a frowsy lumberjack who lived on rotten whiskey and died of sin in Quaker Oats, age 90 or so. But all he was too much for any man to be. A life so full he couldn't include one more thing, nor tell the same story twice if he'd wanted to. And didn't. Just the same, he's dead. A sticky religious voice folded his century sideways, lowered him into the ground like someone still alive, who made other people uncomfortable. Barn raiser and backwoods farmer, become an old man in a one-room apartment over a dry goods store. And earth takes him as it takes more beautiful things, populations of whole countries, museums and works of art, and women with such a glow it makes their background vanish. They vanish, too. Lesbia's singer on her sunny islands stopped when the sun went down. No, my grandfather was decidedly unbeautiful. 250 pounds of scarred slag. I've somehow become his memory, taking on flesh and blood again, the way he imagined me, floating among the pictures in his mind, where his dead body is, laid deep in the earth. And such a relayed picture, perhaps, outlives any work of art, survives among its alternatives. One called Remains of an Indian Village, which is also a revision. Underfoot rotten boards, forest rubble, bones. Animals were here after the plague, after smallpox, to make another ending. For the tutelary gods of decay acknowledge aid from any quarter. Here the charging cotyledons of spring press green forefingers on femurs, vertebra, and delicate bell skulls of children. The moon's waylaid light does not shrink from bone relics and other beauties of nature. Death is certainly absent now, at least in the overwhelming sense that it once walked at night in the village and howled through the mouths of dogs. But everything fades and wavers into something else. The seasonal cycle and the planet's rhythm vary imperceptibly into the other. Spirits of the dead are vanished. Only the great trees remain. And the birth certificate of cedars specifies no memory of a village. As I have seen myself fade from a woman's eyes while I was standing there, and the earth was aware of me no longer. But I come here as part of the process in the pale morning light, thinking what has been thought by no one for years of their absence, in some way continuing them. And I observe the children's shadows running in this green light from a distant star into the near forest, wood violets and trilliums of 100 years ago blooming and vanishing, the villages of the brown people toppling and returning. What moves and lives, occupying the same space, What touched them, owes them. Standing knee-deep in the joined earth of their weightless bones, in the archaeological sunlight, in the trembling voltage of summer, in the sunken reservoirs of rain, standing waist-deep in the crisscross rivers of shadows, in the village of nightfall, the hunters silent, the women bending over dark fires, I hear their broken consonants. The quarrel. Lying side by side, naked in darkness, bodies stiff with anger, tempered thoughts clashing like swords in the room's corners. A limited sort of agony that doesn't kill you, but could. The moon sinks teeth in bedroom, chews at the curtain rod, lifting ocean tides of rage, drags both, one-time lovers, into its twitching pattern. Self-conscious and mare embryo, my darling, running with great 30-foot strides in the apogee and perigee of love, throwing handfuls of pumice and sliding down shale hills in a dream slalom to lacus mortis and lacus somniorum, where youth is a twinkle in the eye of the absolute, and pride an absolute necessity for virgins. Self-conscious and mare embryo? Mad as hell in a bedroom in Ameliasburg Township. Even as in the councils of the great, my darling, and the consultations of the kings of earth, a small quarrel like ours can't be solved. And while that white body protrudes over on my side of the bed, pride is damn difficult. Have I got time to finish this with about 3 minutes of prose? That's about... no, God. There's some more of them here. I forgot. Detail. The ruined stone house has an old apple tree, left there by the farmer, whatever else he took with him. It bears fruit every year, gone wild and wormy, with small, bitter apples nobody eats. Even children know better. I passed that way on the road to Trenton twice a month, all winter long, noticing how the apples clung in spite of hurricane winds, sometimes with caps of snow, little golden bells. And perhaps none of the other travelers looked that way. But I make no parable of them. They were there, and that's all. For some reason, I must remember and think of the leafless tree and its fermented fruit. 1 week in late January, when wind blew down the sun, and earth shook like a cold room no one could live in, with zero weather, soundless golden bells alone in the storm. News reports at Emiliusburg. In the night of my sleep at embassies in Hong Kong and Cairo and human oil capitals of Arab republics, New York and Moscow and London and Paris and Accra and Rome, the people say no. Philosophers search for new absolutes. Acid heads pry into their negative psyche. Bedouin march through stoplights of sand dunes. Pickets circle round factories with banners. New Yorkers parade with newspaper opinions. Housewives demand the price of margarine be lowered. Negro nonviolence reaches invisible barriers at houses abandoned by wealthy distillers. Rocks break the glass and death discolors the gutters. Battalions of students are shouting their slogans. The centuries roll onward like mass-produced coffins to carry the world wherever the world may be going. At Delphi, the oracle gives odds on war. Leonidas turns aside from the pass at Thermopylae to attack the Americans. Hannibal drives his elephants into Toronto. Cleopatra and Caesar sign a treaty with Caesar to fire Chicago and destroy Los Angeles studios. Alexander turns from the gates of the Ganges, moves with his phalanx toward the Kremlin, while the eunuch priests confer in Assyria and defoliate the rice fields in Vietnam. With a small, far whisper at the beginning of human time, ancient men confer with stones and tree spirits that the sons of their sons survive the stalking tiger, outwit the glacier, and slow-footed mammoth moving beyond themselves, shadows governed by shadows. Only behind the centuries is something near silence. Before there was man, before there was anything, no young students to ponder all questions of right and wrong. Be sure that life is no bargain, and life as important as sleep is, while windows are breaking around me. The groundhog pushes a stone to the mouth of his burrow. The goldfinch repairs his nest with a patch of sunset. The fox removes his teeth to a glass for safekeeping. Squirrels retire to a rotten tree, and it blossoms. Pike in the monocle eye of the lake have switched off the planets. I have unbuckled my sword and lay there beside them. The sun has gone down in my village. One minute. Oh, I gotta go. Christ.